Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Welcome to Big Taters. My name is Sarah. Can I start you guys off with an order of our Freedom Tots?
We got all these people, all our friends. They're just sitting around, trying to figure out what to do, trying to figure out how to make something.
I thought you were avoiding me.
Why would you think that?
Because I stole your role.
What's going on with you lately?
I work so hard. Every week it's a new class, a new audition.
Hopefully you'll see something in me.
I know I'd be great for this.
We'll be in touch.
I'm your girl. I will do whatever it takes for this role.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 310 of the Really Awful Movies podcast, 2014 Starry Eyes. Now, you'll have to excuse the sound quality on this one. I'm recording on my balcony once again, and it's a little bit blustery outside, and maybe not the most pristine recording I would have liked, but anyway, this film, Starry Eyes, was inspired by, of all things, a trip to the doctor's office. Now, let me explain. I had an appointment this week, and while I was settling in one of the waiting rooms, I started chatting with one of the assistants, and turns out that she was from LA and had moved up to Toronto for work. And I thought that was pretty surprising because most people from Los Angeles that I've met here have been on vacation and whatnot, and considering how many people do the reverse, how many Canadians go down to La La Land and work, I thought, oh, this is kind of rare. And Starry Eyes is one of those quintessentially Los Angeles films. I mean, it's totally imbued with that kind of, I mean, the title says it right there. You have stars in your eyes when you're seeking to, be a silver screen success. Now, L.A. has really fascinated me, and I talked to this woman in the doctor's office and told her as much, and I said, look, this is a place that looms large in everyone's mind, but that you can't really experience until you get there. You think you know it, but then you're probably considerably off. I mean, you have this notion, at least I do, that the place is just wall-to-wall freeways, and no single neighborhood that is walkable, and there's nothing that, no streetscape that is livable and scaled down to human size in the same way that, like, Boston, New York, or Chicago is. Also, I confess I've been kind of fascinated with the place since, let's say, the Black Dahlia and those bizarro aqueducts that they have flowing all over the place that I just find very weird. Like, I would assume, I don't know, do people skateboard in them? Also the Sunset Strip and the metal scene from the 80s, and just, I mean, the Hollywood lore, and oh, here's that wind again, and the cemeteries and all the people that are buried there, and the Hollywood Hills, and lately I think I've admitted, and this is something like you, I mean, that you should probably be filled with shame for disclosing, but I've been binging this series on Netflix called Selling Sunset that involves these quite over-the-top realtors who are trying to unload these unbelievably extravagant $5 million plus modernist homes, and another series about a plastic surgeon at Beverly Hills. So you have this, I mean, the entire place seems wrapped up in frivolousness and plastic surgery and looks and shallowness and all surface, no depth. And I'm curious to see how my perception of the place actually bears out in real life. And a good friend of mine lived in Culver City, and he was quite taken with the place and really loved it. And I gotta say, and as I'm sure a lot of now Charles Bukowski fans would relate to this, but I mean, all he said, all of his dour misanthropic novels in LA, and in these taverns that he used to hang out at, and he had a job in the postal service, and that certainly has colored my perceptions of the place, not to mention the certain musical acts, whether it's the Red Hot Chili Peppers or the Doors or what have you. There's a certain sensibility. You could throw in Jane's Addiction there too, or to the rappers like Ice Cube and all that stuff. So Starry Eyes features prominently in our book Death by Umbrella, the 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, and my co-author Jeff wrote the entry for that one with a little help from me, I believe, but I don't remember the entry too much, to be honest. It's been a while since we penned that book, but our tastes aligned so well that when I texted him that I was going to podcast this movie, he just said, great film, and I knew he would be on board with it. I'm not as taken with it as he is, but I gotta admit, like, it's really a terrific, very bold and very, I guess, ambitious effort, the kind of thing you don't typically see. And I was curious about this one, and it seemed like almost a companion piece to not only Antiviral in terms of this power of celebrity narrative thrust that it has behind it, but also to the to the Elle Fanning, the Neon Demon, which features a similar kind of motif of people trying to make it in a very cutthroat and business with a sinister underbelly, and that would be the modeling business. Now, the two could have been interchanged or combined, and you take the cinematography and the aesthetic Argento-esque pinks and teal of Neon Demon, and if you combined that sensibility with the plot of this one, you would have had just a bang up 5-star horror effort. Starry Eyes deals with a wannabe actress who works in this night shift in this, as many would-be starlets do, in a crappy restaurant, and I believe it's called Big Taters, and it has obvious allusions to boobs and the cheesy t-shirts, and it's very very tacky. It's a tacky family restaurant, and Sarah Walker lives with some friends with whom she's not really closely connected, and actually they have these internecine little squabbles about who is actually going to break into the film business first, and this is how we're introduced to the main character. And it's through various auditions, and the actress Alexandra Esso, a Canadian actress actually, shout out, she does just a terrific, amazing job as the lead, Sarah Walker, whose auditions have come to nothing, and she's obviously trying to find her big break, and then not being welcomed with open arms by the casting agents and so forth. Now, one role that she spies in one of the industry pages is for the lead in a film called The Silver Scream, which sounds, speaking of Argento, almost Argento-esque, but she goes to audition and is met with profound indifference, it should be said, by a duo, one of whom is almost like a Frau Verbissene, a German woman from Austin Powers, and her gay sidekick. And she's basically dismissed with almost a metaphorical wave of the hand, and while she's in the bathroom melting down, she does connect with one of the casting agents, who sees her having just a complete mental break and pulling at her hair. Being so enticed by this, they bring her in for another audition and ask her to recreate this psychological response again for her second pass at the role, which is kind of a Jamie Lee Curtis final girl type role in the typical stalk and slash kind of movie. So she does so, and sure enough, they're impressed with her to the point where they offer her a one-on-one meeting with the producer, who's very much drawn in the mold of notorious Hollywood dirtbag and just degenerate Harvey Weinstein, of course, comprising one of the fraternal duo of the Weinstein brothers, who produced many a horror film themselves, and against whom many allegations were levied, and about whom much has been said in the popular press. And this producer meets with Sarah Walker one-on-one and proceeds to basically offer it's his equivalent of the casting couch in his gaudy throwback 1950s Hollywood mansion. Now, at first, she doesn't have anything to do with this indecent proposal and finds herself back at the dead-end job and basically begging for her job back to in this sort of Hooters surrogate chicken chain. But soon enough, the hunger for her for fame and stardom can't be satiated other than by succeeding in the cutthroat world of the movie business. So she desperately makes a phone call and does actually decide to go through with it and performs a certain act that is not a sex act, if you believe Bill Clinton, on this producer. Now, that's where things turn haywire in Starry Eyes, and that's where things really get crazy, and it's where things, I think, come apart, but also cohere, if that makes any sense, because the narrative is pulled in many different directions, one being that the producer is part of this underground sort of Bilderberg type Freemason, rich guy cult. They dress in black robes and perform all these horrible acts. They bring this actress into the fold, and then she obviously things take a horrible turn from there. And there's also a supernatural toll that she psychologically and physically pays for what is in effect prostitution to get ahead, and by giving head in this business, something that's pointed out to her by her roommate when they have this spat over her conduct in the business. As I said, the roommate is a jealous, also equally wannabe actress, and so the two of them going at loggerheads over how their careers are proceeding, or in the case of the twosome, maybe not to their liking. Now, there's another character as well, who's an indie filmmaker, and he is offering to cast the two in the role, but honestly, that stuff's small potatoes when you're trying to make it into one of the big studios where you'll be featured even as an unknown on the poster and in the creative collateral and all the assets that would have been put out surrounding the movie. So pretty accurate, and I think a very, very interesting take and setup and backdrop for a horror film put into stark, with the spotlight that the conduct of Harvey Weinstein and the various celebrities that have been Me Too, and who've had accusations levied against them. It makes for a very interesting, very prescient, and very very on-point viewing experience indeed. To the extent it succeeds or fails, again, depends on the direction that they chose to take with the more supernatural elements of Sarah Walker's mental and physical decline that almost manifested itself as a frothing at the mouth and a combination of her, continued pulling out of her hair and increasingly violent behavior. So whether these supernatural elements really could have been dispensed with and altogether, as well as the occult subplot, is probably, I would answer, in the affirmative, and this could have gone the gritty realism take and succeeded just as well. Although it's really hard to say, because in the case of Neon Demon, that movie I think benefited from venturing a little beyond the gritty realism text into other kinds of subtext. So yeah, Starry Eyes, I mean, it really surprising, especially given the pedigree of directors Kevin Kölsch, I'll say it the German way with the umlauts, with Kevin Kölsch and Dennis Widmeyer. Widmeyer actually co-edited the film, but this duo is a directing duo, and I always am suspicious and look askance at anyone who would direct a movie with someone else as a collaborator, because generally when that's done, the word collaborator would be in quotes, because someone is taking on the project of someone else, usually when the studio is not impressed, particularly with the commercial direction it's going in. And so the fact that these two buddies can work together and do so quite effectively is something to be commended, I would say, though I confess I didn't warm to the Pet Sematary reboot as much as they claim, anyway, to be truer to the book or to try and stay true to it. I thought the plot beats mimicked the original far too closely, and the twist in the end, I'm not going to spoil that, but I don't know, fell a little bit flat, especially when they stayed so close to the structure of the original, and then to throw that in out of the blue seemed a little bit off. It's almost like you can't have your cake and eat it too. You either reboot the thing and give it an entirely new look and feel, like Rob Zombie infamously did with the Halloween 2007, and give it just a complete different touch, or why bother doing it at all, because it serves no purpose other than a box office gate for parents who grew up and came of age during a time when the Pet Sematary movie came out, and they want to have something to bond over with their kids. So that's strikes me as being rather cynical. But that movie was also very well directed, it should be said, as was this one. And if I'm going to segue into what I've learned, the Alexandra Esso, as I said before, I mean, she brings so much grit and realism and pathos and drama to this role. She almost single-handedly carries the proceedings, and her ability to render that kind of starlet realistic is terrific, and also her ability to give that shape and life and energy to some of the cheesy productions that some of these people would have be auditioning for, and create a character who's kind of a bad actor as well, and until she's forced into, I guess, a method acting of pulling her own hair out, that she actually gets the part. But it's pretty, she treads a fine line and does just whiz-bang work, I gotta say. Another thing I learned, which is really odd, and speaking of celebrity culture and how frequently horrible and just ubiquitous it is, but I mean, Gene Simmons, Kiss bassist, Simmons Family Jewels, one of the horrible first wave reality shows that broke on these shores in North America broadly, and Gene Simmons' son, Nick Simmons, is in this movie, and I'm embarrassed to say I recognized him. But why? He didn't particularly add anything other than some D-list celebrity, I don't even want to call it cachet, to this role. But so Starry Eyes can be found on Amazon Prime, I'm pretty sure. That's where I caught up with it. And there's some really, really, I guess, tortured and evocative and sinister scenes. And it was particularly as the interesting was how small a movie this is, considering how big a city LA is and how you know, how people are just mesmerized by Melrose and Wilshire Boulevard and all these names that have become so famous the world over, and that, and considering this thing really takes place in the shabby confines of a cheesy apartment. And to the extent anything succeeds or fails, I was thinking about as far as it as things set in LA go. I also watched You, and you can check out, Jeff and I did a podcast, I believe we did that one, of season one, and we were going to follow it up, but I lost track and was unable to follow up with season two. But it's about a stalker and a bibliophile who goes after an MFA grad student, wannabe author types. MFA, some people say, stands for Master of Fuck All, but I kind of tend to agree, as a lot of shitty writers have an MFA, but that, I think, lost its luster when it moved from New York City to Los Angeles, because they couldn't really recreate the, or believably recreate, in my eyes anyway, the literary, strong and robust literary culture of New York, and with the kind of vapid, or at least my perceptions, they could be wrong, you know, boob job and liposuction world of La La Land. But I think you could also make that claim with the likes of Maniac, the Bill Lustig original taking place in the mean streets of Brooklyn, New York, and New York City, versus who is it, Elijah Wood, I believe, I hope I'm right there, and decamping to Los Angeles and making the antagonist of Maniac a more higher end photographer than the more hobby photographer of the character in the Bill Lustig original. And I think as good as that remake was, it still suffered in comparison, because it's much more interesting to shoot something in New York versus Los Angeles. Now, that being said, Starry Eyes makes some sense of the aspirational aspect of the City of Angels, and but can concentrates its horrors in a really tight space, and does so very effectively as well, with occasional streetscape shots, does it very well. Star rating, I'm going to give this one, I'm almost like, the more I talk about it, I think the better it gets, although it's, there's a few moments where I wish it didn't, it hadn't bitten off more than it could chew on the supernatural side of things, but I could almost forgive it just for its sheer audaciousness and plot that relies more on you know, on would-be starlets rather than a bunch of camp counselors or co-eds just going to their Psych 100 and then in the evening getting massacred by some masked butcher type movie that is so popular and so common. So kudos for doing something that is really prescient and really interesting, and that could have, I guess, sort of stayed in the realism milieu instead of delving elsewhere, but nonetheless something, I mean, that's undeniably interesting and cool, and I recommend viewing of three films back to back to back. You could throw in Neon Demon, Antiviral, and Starry Eyes for a great sense of the misguided attempts to make it, or influence of really of pervasive and pernicious celebrity culture and all that that entails. So I would definitely recommend all three, and in which order I would place them. Probably Starry Eyes at the top, and maybe Antiviral in second, but it's really hard to say. That seems fair. I'm going to give this one a solid 3.75, if not 3.5 out of 5 on our rating scheme here. I might even revisit it, which is, I mean, that's high praise from yours truly, because I seldom do that unless it's one of my all-time favorite type horrors, usually in the Lucio Fulci canon, or something John Carpenter or Brian De Palma even. Now, anyway, I'm pretty excited because I got the hot off the presses, my first copy of Mine's Bigger Than Yours, the 100 Wackiest Action Movies. Got that in the mail, and my publisher was nice enough to send along a bottle of vino to accompany with it, as well as a couple of nice letters. So I'm really psyched about that. They did push the release date back, I think thanks to COVID, but I haven't heard back from them yet. So you know, you can still pre-order that book on Amazon, and it'll be coming to WH Smith in the UK, Barnes & Noble, Walmart in the States, and I think Chapters here. It'll be, I'm not sure about other countries, but it'll be in stores in November, so action and genre and kung fu fans, look out for that one, because it's bloody hilarious, and especially Reb Brown fans and Strike Commando fans will really get a kick out of it. Always looking for new movies as I explore Tubi, Shudder, Amazon, Prime, Netflix, and various other means to find new dark and weirdly disturbing horror films to chat with you about. Hoping to get Jeff back here soon, as he's feeling a lot better. So anyway, I shall talk to you soon, and take care. Thank you.